Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. Before the Olympics were announced in Pyeongchang, most people associated the word Korea with North and South, or the DMZ, or nuclear weaponry. However, Se-hee Chang asks that you go beyond the headlines and take a closer look at Korean culture.
As the founder of the company Korea Connect, Chang educates people both young and old across Milwaukee, the state, and the country about Korean culture and society. Through teaching others traditional drumming and cooking, Chang is an unofficial Korean ambassador here.
Chang grew up in South Korea and has lived all over the world. Her experience has taught her the importance of cross-cultural education. So instead of thinking about division and conflict when we think about Korea, she wants people to think about unity, yearning for peace, and stronger together. Chang joined Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski in the studio and began by explaining what led her to create Korea Connect.
I actually started out as an international education major, and I worked at different universities, and I was advising international students. I loved working with people from all over the world, and it just made my job so much more fun and exciting. I grew up all over the world, too, because of my father's job. We traveled and lived in Vietnam and East Africa. So my favorite place in the whole wide world is Nairobi, Kenya, and that's where I spent most of my childhood. And having, of course, lived in Korea, born in Seoul, and then, of course, now living in the U.S. for a long time, I just felt like wherever I went, many people knew that I was from Korea, possibly, but they would start out with the question, are you Chinese or are you from China? And I thought, you know what? I need to educate people about who I am through my country and my culture. And I think in general, in U.S. society, people don't always know a lot about Asian countries or Asian culture, or people tend to lump all Asians together. And then the conversation would start, you know, oh, yeah, I learned about the Korean War.
And then, or the Forgotten War.
Yeah. Or they would sort of stop and be like, so is Korea like, where is Korea? So I would have this sort of frustrating conversation. And that's when I decided I have to start an educational business, educational company, to just keep teaching people about Korea. So that's how it started. Yeah.
Well, and that's fantastic because you have lived in so many places, yet you are grounded and centered on your Korean culture. Did you struggle with your identity as a Korean American? Because you live in Korea up until 12 years old, right?
Right. I did struggle a little bit because, you know, when we first moved to America, I remember the school system saying, well, you know, your English is not quite good, so let's put you in an ESL class. I think people tend to just box you in, right? So Americans would ask me, like, do you eat weird food because you're Korean? Or, you know, and your friends would make fun of you. And you would have some, you know, racial slurs, too, that you would experience. But I think for me, it was just about being grounded with my family and just being comfortable with who you are. But I think it's hard when you're little, and especially when you're at middle school or high school, and you want to fit in and you want to be like the American kids, right? Asian Americans are always considered the other or sometimes the foreigner. I think things are changing for sure, but I think I did have a struggle with my Korean American identity. When I would go back to Korea to visit my relatives, they would say, well, you're so Americanized. Why do you do it that way? And your thinking is so interesting. Is that how Americans think all the time, you know? And so I had also this internal conflict, and I said, wait a minute, I'm still Korean. I'm not American. But now I am so just, you know, so lucky to have these experiences and to be able to say I am a Korean-American woman living in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, United States. And what I love now is teaching my kids how to be sort of, you know, proud of who you are or just to embrace your cultures. So my children are half Korean, and they're also quarter German, quarter British. My husband is from northern Germany. So, you know, we sort of get to travel with the kids to Germany, to Europe. We go to Korea. We were just in Korea this summer with the kids. And we tried to tell them, you know, this is who you are. And you are very lucky to be able to navigate all these cultures. So It's a challenge when you're young and you're not quite sure of yourself. But now I feel like sort of my struggles when I was younger have really shaped me in a positive way. And I'm a pretty strong woman. So, you know, I don't know. I think I can sort of embrace it all.
Definitely. And it is that interesting perspective as an adult compared to when you're a kid and trying to balance, well, what do I want to be most a part of? But it's also important for adults to, if anything, be more open about learning about other cultures and not boxing people in. So what is, you know, the importance of cross-cultural education, especially for adults in the United States?
To me, America is so beautiful and wonderful because of its racial and ethnic diversity. That's the most, I think, unique aspect of this society. And so that's why Americans have to learn how to deal with each other. They have to be able to work with colleagues who look different from them. They need to be able to teach students who come from a totally different cultural background. You know, you need to be able to understand ESL students or just have some empathy and a little bit of compassion. I think that'll just make our lives so much easier. And not always, first thing, judge about who you are because, you know, you have dark skin or you look Asian or Chinese. I really feel like it's so important to highlight and really just take advantage of that diversity because I think no other country has this sort of beautiful mosaic of diverse people and backgrounds. And so I think that's why it's so important for Americans to learn about the other. And especially now, politically, it's been sometimes difficult. And I think we just need to realize that we all want the same thing. We're all human beings, you know, and that's, I think, what makes America so unique and interesting.
One really interesting thing you were telling me before we came on air was that you're recently training military members about Korean culture through an immersive class. And you mainly teach people about Korea through traditional drumming and cooking. So tell me about why you focused on music and cuisine.
Yeah. I chose cooking and music because these are the two most comfortable and fun topics. And they unite people no matter what, right? So that's why I was teaching how to make traditional Korean rice cakes in Bemidji, Minnesota with these, you know, military soldiers. And it was fascinating because they loved it. And they also had some experience with Korea already. And music. I have a lot of friends who are drummers and percussionists. And I feel like for me, anybody and everybody can play a drum. You can bang on a drum and you can make music. So I chose specifically the Korean drumming because I was trained in traditional Korean drumming. I just won a grant through the Wisconsin Arts Board for the Korean Folk Arts Apprenticeship Program. And my role now is to teach other students, other folks about Korean drumming, and we pass it on in Wisconsin. It's such an honor, and I'm humbled to do that. And I feel like, again, the music, the drumming, it starts breaking down barriers, right? And the drum that I brought is a beautiful wooden drum called the changgu, and it represents the sound of rain. And it's a versatile, beautiful drum handmade by a master Korean, you know, drum maker. And I hope I can share the rhythms with you soon.
Hopefully, yes. I was also curious to find out that you went back to Korea to learn about this drumming specifically.
Yes.
So we were talking a bit earlier about how you view things differently as an adult. So to be an adult going back to Korea to learn a new art right away, how did that make you feel and did it reaffirm your connection?
Yeah, it was definitely, I think, you know, a little harder, but I was much younger at that time. I was in college, you know, and I'm almost, 50 years old. So I feel like, you know, somehow, you know, just being back in Korea re-energized me. And I felt like, again, going back to your question about sort of being Korean-American and the identity issue, I felt like something was missing. You know, I'm Korean-American, but, you know, I don't know much about Korean history and my tradition and my people's arts, right, or my people's music. So I went back, and it was an amazing experience. I was able to connect with other students, other college students in Korea. And again, just re-immersing back into your country was fantastic. I had been to Korea like almost every year because my parents were living there at that time. But still, just to connect with the young people who were using drumming as sort of a tool for peacemaking or community building, to me, that was just amazing.
With you immersing yourself back into Korean culture and sharing it nationally here in Wisconsin across the U.S., what have you learned about others through teaching them about Korean culture? You know, is there a surprising lesson that mm-hmm. you consistently learn with each new group of people you interact with?
Mm-hmm. I guess it is maybe surprising, but also not so surprising. I learned that we have a lot in common. I was teaching a kimchi making class. Kimchi is a Korean side dish. It's like a pickled and fermented cabbage dish. It's pretty spicy. And I was working with ninth grade boys at Bayview High School. And they were like looking at me like, who is this strange lady and what are we making today? And we started making kimchi together. And at first they were sort of like, you know, making faces like, oh, it sort of smells funny. And then we had a tasting session afterwards. And then a young man came up to me and he said, you know, Miss Chang, this tastes a lot like my grandmother's homemade pickles. So for me, that was sort of a surprise. You know, I didn't realize he was going to compare kimchi to his grandmother's homemade pickles. But it was also wonderful because he connected with me and I connected with him. And I learned something new about his culture, right? Mm. So I was like, wow, this is amazing. Same with the drumming. You know, we start drumming traditional. So Korean traditional rhythms are a little bit different. You can't quite compare it to Western, you know, beats. And it's still very different from African drumming rhythms. So, you know, we talked about how these rhythms are so different. But somehow different cultures play drums because of celebrations, holidays, festivals, right? You know, celebrate the successful fall harvest or celebrate a wedding, right? And we started talking about that, like in certain Latin American countries, you know, you do drumming to celebrate, just like Korean drumming. Yeah.
A large part of the recent Olympic opening ceremonies in South Korea was the pinnacle of this massive group of Korean drummers.
Yes.
And you mentioned for people to think of peace and unity. So what does it mean for you to have the unified North and South Korea team?
It means so much to me. And I was thinking of my parents. I hope I don't get too emotional. My mother came. She was a North Korean refugee. She was only 6 years old. But when the war broke out in 1950, so many Koreans from the North fled to the South. My mother's story is just one story, and her family had to leave all, you know, their belongings and some of their relatives behind. And many were killed. They had to cross the river at night. You couldn't, you know, be seen by the North Korean soldiers. So all these sort of scary images of fleeing the war and being a refugee. But at the same time, I feel like my mother, having met my father, who is from South Korea, just, I guess to me, that sort of signifies and symbolizes unity and how, although we are still divided, the Korean Peninsula, you know, still is divided, and you have the DMZ, the Demilitarized Zone, the Korean people are not divided. My mother's family, they have, you know, relatives still in North Korea. They cannot visit. They cannot talk to each other. And I remember my grandfather saying, I hope one day I will be buried in North Korea, back in my village. And we were like, that's not going to happen, right? But I have hope, and I wish for that day when we are reunited. Because I think through people's goodwill, I think it'll happen. So when I saw all those athletes walking in, oh my gosh, I was tearing up. And, you know, I'm sort of tearing up right now, but it was beautiful. And that's what, to me, the Korean Peninsula and my country represents. And I hope someday that there will really be peace. And I hope other countries will support that, will help to support that. Yeah, especially the, you know, key players around the globe.
Well, we just heard word that Kim Jong-un's sister invited South Korea to come to North Korea. So that's a major accomplishment.
I know. Yes, yes. So, yeah, there is definitely hope, right, Audrey?
Yes. So with the Olympics in Pyeongchang highlighting Korea on the global stage, what do you want people to keep in mind after the Olympics are done? Mm-hmm. You know, after this great symbolism, this great sportsmanship.
Yeah.
Of, you know, it's only
that's
2 weeks.
Question.
You know, what should people still keep in mind about Korea after the Olympics are done?
I want people to still keep reading and learning about Korea. Read about South Korea. Read about North Korea. Don't always just automatically believe what the, you know, sort of the main media says about our country and our cultures. I think it would be great if you're a parent, talk to your kids about Asia, specifically, of course, for me, Korea. maybe reach out to a Korean American or a Korean friend or a colleague and just learn more about their stories. And I think through reaching out and having that personal connection, you know, make it more personal. Don't just think about Korea's over there and we're over here. Our world is not that huge. So I want people to enjoy the Olympics, of course, enjoy all the cool sports. But think about how does South Korean trade affect U.S. trade if you're a businessman, right? And think more carefully about cultural nuances. And, you know, again, just go beyond that, I guess. It's not just only for Korea. It applies to other countries around the world. For me, it's not just, you know, reading about the headlines, just going a little bit beyond that. Yeah.
Well, Sehi Elan, and thank you so much for coming in today and sharing some of this information with us.
Yay. Thank you.
Sehi Chang is the founder of Korea Connect, a service that educates people about Korean culture, society, music, and food, as well as offering interpreting and translation services. She spoke with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski, and you can find out more about Korea Connect and listen to a Korean folk song Chang performed in our studio at WUWM.com.